Jack Daniels whiskey at 1.5. It's how the folks around here have been living their lives. Waking and baking every morning at 8. Make it to work, they're always late.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Friday morning. What's led to this Friday morning? We do appreciate it. Join us on the line now. It's been a couple of weeks. Obviously, the holidays have come and gone, but we reunite to hear from our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, joining us on the line. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. It's glad to be back with you. That was kind of weird for a couple of weeks. I was like, what do we do on Friday? You know?
Yeah. Well, it was being awful Friday. Those 4-day weeks. Well, one of those weeks was like a 3-day week because of Auburn's bowl game. But they take you, get a little rust on you. You're not as fresh. I always get off my game after time off. But anyway, we're back reunited, and just as soon as we are able to get the band back together, you're off to Montgomery next week. I've been. You know, we talked a little bit about this during the break there, but this session, it is the fourth year of a quadrennium, and it is going to be slow, but it's not going to be a typical fourth year, it doesn't seem, just because you lost that 1 year in 2020.
No, I don't think so. I think there's going to be a lot going on this session. I think if you just look at the budget alone, and the different financial decisions that the legislature has got to make for the state, there's a lot to do, right? You've got the usual budget process. Both budgets are flush, which is a good problem to have, of course, but it means that there's a lot of work to do in order to figure out what to do with the surpluses there. Then you've got all the ARPA money, the first tranche of which there's another $700 million left. We spent, $400 of it on prisons. And 80 or so on backstop in nursing homes and hospitals. But so you've got that $700 million or so to spend. And then you've got the federal infrastructure, and I air quotes on the infrastructure money there. But that's significant in that we're going to have to really work hard to understand and, frankly, to get out of the Fed what we can and cannot spend that money on, whether it's broadband or, water and sewer improvements and those types of things, and where to spend that money. And then, of course, you've got the second tranche of ARPA money that will be coming in the summer, which has a clock on it. So I fully expect to be going back into a special session sometime in the middle to late summer to deal with that second tranche of ARPA money. So it's not exciting, but it's an awful lot of work to do from the finance side of things. And then I think you'll see, of course, a lot of members who have got those pieces of legislation that are critically important to them, that will get some airtime, of course, and that ranges from, member to member.
So they have another special session in I guess what would be the heat of the summer there, as a election is approaching.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound like fun? Montgomery in the summer, great place to be. But, I really do. I think that's likely to happen. And it's because of the timing on the ARPA money. It's all got a clock on it on when it has to be spent, and in order to do that, you've got to appropriate it first, and I think that the likelihood that we'll be back pretty shortly after that tranche hits in the early summer, I think we'll be back to go ahead and look at allocating the balance of that. Now, so it's up to the governor, not me, and we'll see what she ends up doing there, but I would anticipate that.
Hearing a lot about this, so we had Chairman Klaus on earlier this week, and I hadn't heard much about this until this, but the state government's going to look at places where they can upgrade a water and sewer infrastructure. That seems like, in addition to rural broadband, but trying to look at things on that level. What do you make of that?
That's part of what we can spend a lot of this federal money on. And, that's an issue that's crucial in our area, obviously close to the water, and water quality in general is very, very, important to us. And ratepayers and municipalities and are spending an awful lot of money doing that already. And the extent we can use some of that federal money that's you know, we probably ought not to be spending at all, but that's a different argument, on something that's an important infrastructure investment is something we certainly ought to look at. The interesting thing is the municipalities and the counties are also looking at spending money on, you know, wastewater and water supply improvements. And I think the crucial thing here is going to be to coordinate those efforts as much as possible to make sure that we're getting the best bang for the buck, not just at the state level, but at the county and municipal level as well. So that's certainly a challenge. But I think that's what's going to take the work as we get moving forward is how do we coordinate those efforts? How do we make sure we're spending that money as efficiently as possible and getting results from it? I'm terribly concerned that we not do things that are, you know, flippant with this money, but that there are actual tangible results from it. And I think that's a reasonable place to go.
I mean, is it just this, that because we have you have this money and it has a lot of limitations, that maybe you do step outside those boundaries of what state government typically does and look for places? I don't know. Rural broadband seems to kind of fit the narrative of economic development and education. But when we start getting into these local level issues like water and sewer, septic tanks and things like that, that goes beyond what the role of the state government is.
So no question about it. And that's one of the things that really drives me nuts about this is we are, as a state legislature, being asked to spend federal money that's, you know, borrowed from our grandchildren, right, on projects that we otherwise would not fund. But the money is coming. The feds are sending it, and that bill has passed, and now it is incumbent upon us to allocate it, to appropriate it, and to do so within the confines of what the feds have said it needs to be spent on. And some of those things are just downright, you know, off the wall as far as I'm concerned. But that's our job, is to allocate that money and appropriate that money, and we'll do it. I just want to make sure we do it as efficiently as possible and in a manner that does not create a recurring expense for the state government. And that's something I'm very concerned with. It's very easy to say, oh, there's plenty of money. Well, what happens when the federal largesse runs out, which it absolutely will? I do not want to create a recurring obligation for state government that exists beyond these two tranches of money so that we do not end up in a spot where the taxpayers are responsible for something long term that they otherwise would have never agreed to.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, there will be, and we could call them election year bills or whatever, but permitless carry, critical race theory ban, maybe something, an abortion bill that mirrors what Mississippi has done or what Texas has done, things of that nature. Just how much oxygen do you foresee being dedicated to those efforts?
I think a fair amount in the House, and the question will be what does the Senate do with them and at what pace? But I think that all of those issues are going to get a lot of attention in the House and a lot of debate in the House. I think you'll see the Senate start with and work on what I would say are maybe more boring issues of governance, like budgets, like ARPA, et cetera. And then, you know, we'll probably take up those other measures later on in the session, but I don't think you're going to see hot out of the box the Senate taking up those types of measures. I think that'll be what the House is doing early on, is at least my understanding.
Well, the Senate's interesting, and I assume this is still kind of the dynamic. This is where the Senate's where stuff gets passed, and in the last few years, you send it downstairs to the House, and it just kind of withers on the vine, and it goes away. You think the Senate and the House play ball more together this year?
I'm not sure. You've got some leadership changes that are coming up in their term in the House. It'll be curious to see how that works out. I think from what I'm hearing and what I'm understanding in my conversations, again, you know, we're going to let them do their thing. They've laid out their roadmap and they're headed down it. And that's, you know, good for them. They go do that. Ours is probably a little bit, again, the more boring stuff, right? But the constitutional obligations of budgeting the money, But it'll be interesting to see of what happens with a lot of those really hot button issues that you've laid out upstairs, and what the timing looks like, frankly, on those. Because, you know, by the time they get upstairs and by the time we get through with some of the budget issues, the ARPA issues, the infrastructure issues, being an election year, I think folks are going to be interested in getting home. I mean, I'm certainly keen to take them up. I have no problem with that. I just don't think they've got probably the same priority, if you will, as they may have downstairs.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I guess as an observer of both chambers here, is there any reason to believe the House is going to be as active as they've led on, just given what we've seen with the lottery, what we've seen with a lot of the things, you know, as time ran out there last year, you know, that a lot of things just didn't get considered, that the House now, they put out this standing tall agenda, and they look like they're all ready to go. But just based on if it passes precedent, is there any reason to think that this is going to be any different this year?
I'm in a wait and see type of posture right now. So you know, they've laid out their agenda, they've laid out their priorities, and I think we're going to see if they get after it and what they're able to produce and get past. You know, there's a super majority. They ought to be able to do most anything they want to, if they've got everybody on the same page. You know, the curious thing is going to be gambling and lottery again, and whether or not that moves upstairs, back downstairs, and how they deal with that again. So that'll be the curious thing as far as, you know, non-budget related issues for me, to see how that works and whether or not there's an appetite for that downstairs at all.
Well, something else that's supposed to, you know, a lot of things left to be done. Local bills, local legislation. There's a lot of that was left behind because, you know, just COVID or just time, and everybody wanted to get that in. What does that look like for Baldwin County?
You know, we've got a number of different, you know, local bills that are fairly non-controversial. I imagine those will move fairly smoothly. I mean, they deal with issues like the office of the coroner and some more landmark districts, if you can imagine that. So we'll be looking at some of those. So I don't see anything controversial or things or anything that will take up a lot of floor time one way or the other. Those local bills are almost dispensed with like resolutions. You know, if the delegation signed off on them, they tend to move pretty quickly. It's a, you know, period of the day on the calendar that seems pretty non-controversial, unless, of course, somebody's trying to slow something down. But I would think that the local legislation, at least for Baldwin County, ought to move fairly quickly and without and unimpeded.
Well, let's talk about going into this election cycle. I got to think, you know, obviously you're on the ballot this year, but you know, other than the usual, maybe federalized, nationalized political topics, you're hearing about that. You hear about the I-10 bridge. You know, other than that, and those things, what are you hearing from people when you're out and about?
You know, I continue to hear from folks about vaccine mandates. Of course, the Supreme Court is hearing that right now as we speak and talking about that. I mean, this legislature and I have personally worked very hard to make sure we push back against the Biden administration on some of these giant federal overreaches and manage, frankly, the fallout from a supply chain issue to an inflation issue, that we try to manage that as best as possible we can at the state, and there's not a whole lot we can do. But it is starting to impact people. It is impacting personal budgets where, you know, people's dollars are not going as far. Senator Orr has a bill that is a modest, you know, tax cut, if you will, that I am co-sponsoring. I think he's wise on that, going in the right direction. We're doing everything we can to push back against this administration, and I am hopeful that administration changes in the next election. I think the midterms are going to be very interesting for the Democrats across the country. I expect some significant change there. But the local issues are are the same as they've been. You correctly point them out. They're infrastructure related, and they're funding related for infrastructure improvement. That's you know what we continue to fight for and continue to do reasonably well with here recently.
What is the what is your take on the implementation thus far, three and some odd years in, on Rebuild Alabama? Is it progressing like you thought it would?
Well, yes, with one small change, and the change is the president changed. You know, look, President Trump was very supportive of infrastructure spending and infrastructure enhancements. And my time on the commission and then early as a senator, you know, going to D.C. and talking about infrastructure with the administration and their representatives were very fruitful. I mean, we were talking with the Department of Transportation. We were talking with the Federal Highway Administration and really getting somewhere on that. But one of the key things that President Trump was asking for was increased state investment in infrastructure, right? You want more federal money, that's great. You know, he was working on a huge transportation package himself, an infrastructure package that actually dealt with infrastructure as opposed to what the Democrats have recently passed. And one of those key things was for those states that had not increased their gas tax in a long time to do so. So in no small part, based on, you know, President Trump's urging, you know, that the legislature and the governor took that on and we've done that. Do I wish that more of it was spent in my district? Yes. Do I wish that more of it, you know, that there were more projects on the ground right now? Yes. But listen, there's road projects going on all around my district right now. They're in Baldwin County. There should be. There need to be more, and we'll continue to work on those. But a lot of that is a direct result of Rebuild Alabama and getting it passed. And I just hope people remember that, you know, that was something that President Trump was pushing as well. And but for the change in the Oval Office, I think we'd be in a very different spot as it relates to the I-10 bridge and other infrastructure, major infrastructure improvements in Alabama.
Senator, we're going to get out of here. You've been very kind with your time, as always, but let's talk again soon.
We'll do it, Jeff. Have a great weekend and enjoy it.
All right. That was State Senator Chris Elliott there on the line, our returning champion, as I like to say. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at After Talk 106.5. Shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind.